Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back to Directly Current. I'm your host, Max Patton. You've probably heard that the electric grid is under severe strain and that electric cars are of no help. And this is in some ways a little bit overblown, but it's also true, particularly in the era of large data centers and AI. But it doesn't have to be that way, and in fact, electric cars can be part of the solution. We've spoken on this show briefly before about concepts like vehicle-to-grid and vehicles like a Ford Lightning being used as a home backup power source, but to do grid solutions at scale, that's going to take a lot of smart software and coordination, and that's where WeaveGrid comes in. On today's show, I'm speaking with the founder and CEO, Apoorv Bhargava, a super smart guy who knows his stuff, both about working with utilities, with OEMs, as in the guys who make the cars, and with consumers or drivers who are the ones who are paying the electric bill and potentially realizing savings. Now, the savings come everywhere here, because with the smart software that Apoorv is promising with WeaveGrid, grid operators can delay or avoid costly distribution upgrades and also smartly optimize their infrastructure, including integrating with some of our favorite vehicles like Rivians, even Toyotas, as well as other EVs, more to come down the pipeline. This is a great conversation. I love talking with startups. I especially love talking with founders who are solving a niche problem that is going to be a very big one years from now, and they're getting in on this early. Really admire what he and the team are doing, so I'll let the conversation run. All right, Apoorv from WeaveGrid, thanks so much for coming on to Directly Current. Welcome. Can you give everyone just an idea of what WeaveGrid does for both the utility side of things and also consumers with EVs?
First of all, thanks so much for having me on, Max. Really excited to be here. Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about WeaveGrid here. And what WeaveGrid is doing is we've essentially built a platform that enables customers to have their vehicles automatically charged at the best times for them and for the electric grid. And when I say the electric grid, that kind of brings up the second partner, of course, that we think about, which are electric utilities. As we think about electrification and that whole evolution to electric vehicles, there are going to be a series of requirements on how we have to upgrade the infrastructure and build out the grid, but also on how we actually match the supply and demand and the constraints on the grid with the needs of charging and with the needs of consumers. And so serving that, automating that charging, making sure that load can be in a very low cost and clean way served by all the energy production that we have to do on the other side of the grid, that's really what WeaveGrid facilitates. And then there's a third layer. And this third component, the one we didn't talk about yet, or that you didn't mention yet, are, of course, our partners on the automotive and the charging side. And so we work very closely with them as well in our platform to make sure that we can enable their vehicles and their chargers to actually participate in these utility room programs that allow people to have access to smart charging benefits.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, those three players, you know, they have to work together in concert for this to work. And now when it does work, you're right, the benefits are massive, right? It's a better, more stable grid. It actually converts to what people think about electric vehicles. It actually can result in a better, more resilient grid than if you didn't have those as a load balancer, right? At night, exactly. Or whatever those off-peak times happen to be. And you guys, yeah, have made some of those partnerships happen. At a basic level, someone has to figure out, do I live in the right place with the right utility? Do I have the right vehicle? Is that just something that people are going to discover through the app of their vehicle maker? Like, how do you guys enable that to happen for the customer?
Yeah, these are exactly the right questions. What WeaveGrid tries to do is be the behind-the-scenes enabler to make all of this happen. Look, let's start at the very beginning. As a consumer buys a vehicle, I know you've had other folks like my really good friend Rohan Puri on the pod and others like that who talk a lot about public charging. And while that, I think, captures a lot of the imagination for people who are about to make the switch to EVs, as we all know, as EV drivers, 80% of charging still happens at home. And a lot of that charging at home can be happening at much better times for the grid. So when, as a new EV driver, when you buy a vehicle, you're setting up a charger at home. Maybe you don't even need to do a bunch of work on your home because you've already got the 240 volts at your in your garage because of your dryer outlet or whatever. But the point is, as you're going and installing your charger and now thinking about when to have your vehicle charge, you need to do it in a way that's best for you as a normal driver. You shouldn't be having to overthink, should I be plugging in at this time? Should I be setting a timer at that time? Is it going to be clean? Is it going to be dirty? Is it going to be more expensive? You don't want to do all that. That's too much thinking. WeaveGrid works really closely with each of the stakeholders, notably the utility that serves you in the place that you live. So let's say in Northern Virginia, it'll be Dominion Energy. In Colorado, it'd be Xcel Energy. And we make sure that you, based on the vehicle or the charger that you have, are able to participate in what are known as utility managed charging programs, where essentially we automate that charging so that we are actually using not just your vehicle, but everyone's vehicles, as many vehicles as possible, as many chargers as possible, and aggregating them into this large construct that some people call a virtual power plant, some people call managed charging programs, whatever you want to call it. But the point is we aggregate and build a portfolio of total demand that we can then use to balance the renewable energy that might be produced at that same time, or to optimize for less carbon emitting sources of generation at that same time. But really more critically, ensuring that your charging and your neighbor's charging and your neighbor's charging all doesn't happen at exactly the same moment that causes your local neighborhood to actually have a series of overloads and then forces your utility to have to go upgrade a part of your grid, which might seem at a micro level like a really small problem. But if you add that up enough across enough neighborhoods in America, suddenly that's a ginormous problem from a cost perspective. And so that's the kind of thing that WeaveGrid is really automating and taking care of in the background while trying to make it as easy as possible for the consumer. And yeah, like one of our new partners, Rivian, for example, when you own a Rivian, in your app, when you look at your Rivian app in the energy and charging section, it'll say smart charging, and you can just click the button there and it'll take you through that enrollment process I'm talking about with your local utility that WeaveGrid is matching you to, and we'll take care of all that automated charging in the background.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. My mom has an R1S. I think she needs to go sign up. We'll make sure utility supports
it. Yeah, but it's a five.
Yeah, yeah. So. Honda, Toyota, I think are also some of your OEM partners. The demand side of things is a little bit simpler, I think, from the vehicle level, right? Every EV has essentially standardized around charging. The ports look slightly different now depending on which one you get, but everything will eventually have the Tesla NACS, which could do AC at home the same way. And it's fairly easy to get an adapter either way. More complicated is, you mentioned this idea of doing virtual power plants, and some vehicles in different implementations are shipping with this kind of bidirectional technology where they can actually output power to your home or potentially to the grid. Is that something that you guys are exploring in a kind of programmatic way? Because I know every vehicle does it differently. Obviously, every utility will treat programs like that differently, but I imagine that's something you're looking at WeaveGrid.
Yeah, absolutely. The way we're building our platform, the way we've built our platform is to be able to serve what I would call all use cases that fit within the sort of construct of what's known as the virtual power plant. Let's take a step back and talk about why this is even important, right? Vehicle load growth by itself is an important enough problem that we need to go resolve. Then you look at the real macro moment we're in, which is that with AI data centers coming along, with more and more onshoring and reshoring and industrial load growth also happening, and electrification on top of that, we're in this like mega demand moment for energy and electricity like we've never seen, frankly, in the last 40 years. And so what that does is it puts a tremendous amount of strain on the entire electric grid as we know it from every level, from generation, which is what we're most familiar with, big power plants, right? Through to transmission, those high voltage lines that go across the whole country, but really also all the way down to distribution, which is the last mile infrastructure that increasingly makes up anywhere between 30 to even 60% of your bill. So everyone thinks it's actually the solar or the wind or the coal or the gas that's actually the majority of your bill. It isn't. Increasingly, it's becoming the poles and wires that deliver energy to your home. And I think one of the misnomers is that V2G will fix all that. V2G is just an extra electron, right? Now, whether it's being shipped to your home or to your grid, it's more electrons. And we definitely need more supply in this moment of more demand. But we actually need inherently more flexibility. whether that's through supply that comes from the battery output, or whether that's through management, which is what some people call managed charging, some people call V1G, but also where, frankly, the technology is at in a place of much deeper maturity than bidirectionality. The inherent sort of foundation we need is that vehicles can be managed first unidirectionally and then bidirectionally. And so with that in mind, the way we built our platform was we said, how do we look at the end-to-end value stack? How do we look at like the way that every form of flexibility from each individual car and consumer aggregated into a portfolio? How do we make sure that it can deliver as many dollars of value back to consumers and to the grid? And been building the technology in that way, it allowed us to go across generation, transmission, and distribution. And it also allowed us to say that we should build in use cases that might be still a few years out, like bidirectionality, into the platform, into the optimization, into making sure that our AI models are actually looking at that forecasting and then being able to actually output negative values in terms of dispatching load. And we demonstrated that with Kia. We actually did a proof of concept last year where we showed off that we can do that in the field out there today. But the bigger point is really that today at scale, most vehicles are very capable of having their charging managed for the right time. And I will very much, my hot take is the right time is not a time of use rate. Most time of use rates are extremely inadequate. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more that you can do with just the managed charging alone. And then we can get into bidirectionality as we get to what you said rightly is the programmatic unlock. And that's where we're waiting on rules and regulations and standards and interconnections and all of those things to get sorted out, not to mention the OEMs themselves. And then that's when you really get to like even more value of flexibility from the vehicles. So hopefully that was a good overview of how we're thinking about VPPs and V2G and that.
Yeah, two things. One thing, just to clear up for listeners, that time of use is a more dumber or more static model, right? Where you typically have the evening hours, there's a set rate versus when the peak or normal daytime rate is. And that's the default that a lot of utilities do. It requires some kind of basic smart meter, but it's not a very integrated approach. The smart management obviously is more where you guys will come in, where that's right. Making sure you're not conflicting with your neighbors or your aggregated neighbors and the rest of your grid, and that everything's more stable at a more granular level. On the vehicle-to-grid note, I like that approach because I am very bullish on vehicle-to-grid. I'm very excited about it, but you're right that like right now, even the vehicles that ship with bidirectional capability, it hasn't been like, it's not necessarily going to be the like ISO 1158 or whatever the standard is, right? Exactly. The industry hasn't quite coalesced there. And the way that I've seen consumers using it is, oh, I'm going to power a tool with my F-150 Lightning. I'm going to power my home with this bespoke Ford ChargeStation Pro. We should be sponsored by Ford here. There's lots of cool solutions, but they're very like proprietary and bespoke at this moment. I think you're right that, yeah, that's the future, not necessarily now, as much as exciting as that is. So the load management, huge component of it. The other thing I want to seize on there, as you mentioned, you're looking at like the data center and the AI grill. Yeah. And that is the opposite. The beauty of EVs is however much hand-wringing we want to do about the grid and the load they'll put on it, even a rapid adoption of EVs, it's more flexible inherently, right? Because someone doesn't care if their car is charging at a certain time in the middle of the night versus another time, as long as they can use it generally the way they use a car. Whereas these AI data center loads, those are happening 24/7.
God, no, I think something that's like really poorly misunderstood by the industry, but actually a lot of enthusiasts in this world and in the clean energy world and just in general, even in folks who are familiar with EVs, is just like how much inherent capacity is already sitting in our garages today. When you look at the total number of vehicles on the road today, plug-in vehicles on the road today, we're close to 7 million plug-in vehicles on the road today in the United States. When you aggregate up all the batteries inside all of those, and sure, we can haircut some for PHEVs, we can have some for full BEVs, it comes out conservatively to somewhere on the order of about 30 gigawatts of battery capacity sitting around, of plug-in capacity that could be plugged in. 30 gigawatts is 30 nuclear, big nuclear power plants. So when you actually look at the potential of what EVs, again, absolutely with bidirectionality, but even before we get to bidirectionality, what they can do with unidirectional management, load management. I mean, the data center problem could go away if we started tapping into that full potential. And just to be clear, there's more plug-in vehicles on the roads today than residential solar panels. Mm. So there's so much talk about resi solar and the VPPs that could be coming from there. We've got way bigger batteries with way more potential sitting in everyone's garage with so much flexibility, exactly like you said. And I think if you can build that foundation of taking advantage of all of that flexibility, as the over-the-air updates happen, or about to happen for some of the big OEMs to make them bidirectional capable, right? As we see more and more hardware updated in the newer brands that are coming out, and they're starting to become bidirectional capable, yes, you can now start to take advantage of the trust that consumers have that, hey, if somebody's fiddling with my charging in the background, which is what's fundamentally happened, that I can trust that I will still have a fully charged vehicle that is ready to go by the time I need it to go. And then that allows you to build even more value on top of that. So yeah, I'm very excited. I think to your point in this moment, like EVs are just such a huge resource pool, but we're just like, it would be funny if I said we're scratching the surface. We're like scratching the surface of the surface. It's that low. There's such a few and small number of vehicles that are even participating in these programs. WeaveGrid's had tremendous growth. I know there are other players out there as well who've been doing that, but like we are still collectively barely hitting a few percentage points of total vehicles on the road. And so it starts to give you a sense of just like the potential of managed charging. What one thing, and I know I threw out a little bit of a bomb by talking about time of use rates and why I bring up my hot take there is time of use rates were meant to be the simple tool when EVs were at like 0.5% penetration. It was meant to be the sort of very simple but dumb tool to basically make sure people charged when the power plants weren't running as much. Everything has changed though. Right now, to your point, we've got data centers. So power plants are actually running at different times. We've got a ton more renewable energy. So maybe those rates don't even line with when we have oversupply, which might be in the middle of the day when there's a ton of solar. So it doesn't even reflect the realities on the grid. And I think thirdly, it's only solving for the generation side of the grid. And exactly as you highlighted rightly, you know, your neighbor and your neighbor's neighbor and everyone charging at 9 p.m., well, you just created a new problem when trying to fix the first one. So that's why I think, again, this idea of intelligent orchestration, intelligent autonomous orchestration in the background, which is what WeaveGrid really tries to do, is so critical if we want to take full advantage of EVs.
Yeah. The other thing I want to seize on is, like you said, a lot simpler right now to do it, even for the EV market share that exists currently, just from this low, you know, unidirectional point of view for EVs. That still requires some level of integration, right? Because there's several ways to do this. You've seen utilities do it through smart chargers. You've seen them do it through smart chargers that decide to stop doing business in North America very suddenly. Obviously, yeah. Right, there's different points in the chain. You guys are trying to do it in your software through the vehicle and the utility side of things, connecting those. So can you talk a little bit about that approach technologically, how you go about integrating with a partner like Rivian or whoever it might be, like what that requires on their end for the vehicle, how those come into play?
It's a spectrum that we're so glad to see across the industry, but it definitely means that we have to also try and shift everyone towards what is ultimately what we call the grid interactive vehicle. And what we say when we say the words grid interactive vehicle is that no vehicle coming off of any line with a battery and a plug is inherently ready to become a grid asset. To the way you opened the podcast, EVs have the potential to be one of the greatest grid assets out there, but if they're not managed well, if they're honestly undermanaged or poorly managed or unmanaged, they become a grid liability. And I think there is a potential by working really closely with the OEMs to turn them into these grid interactive assets. And so we go down and think about it in a layered kind of manner. We say, okay, what data is inherently available within the telemetry of the vehicle? What data can we get from everywhere down from the battery management system through to understanding how those vehicles charge at the inverter and so forth? Then we go up to the controls level and we say, okay, from a control standpoint, how much flexibility will we get when we send certain signals to the car? How will they respond and so on? And then eventually we're getting to the third layer, which is bidirectionality. So really thinking about the powertrain and the BMS again and ensuring that those, you know, those backwards going electrons are actually now in line with grid standards and grid codes that utilities have been at least designing for residential solar and residential batteries, but that EVs hopefully don't have to go through a whole new exercise and have to go and reinvent the wheel, but can actually adhere to those similar standards. Believe it or not, even the most advanced vehicles and even the most advanced manufacturers did not build vehicles with all of those considerations in mind. While we work with incredible partners like Tesla, they have really fantastic data controls, et cetera, all of that built into their vehicle because they built it in a much more software-defined way from day one. But Tesla also didn't day one design all the vehicles to be a grid asset. Mm-hmm. We've spent a lot of time working and collaborating with folks like them. With Rivian, I think they've again had so much of this already built into their vehicle. So it's not as hard, but it's a lot of working with them to say, okay, what can we take that you've already got? And what do we need you to go update in your designs and in your models so that we can actually turn this into an asset for your consumer and for you to be able to monetize? And then with some of the legacy OEMs, it really is working hand in glove with them to think not just about the current model years, but also pushing, looking further out. And to give you an example, Kia, Toyota, and Hyundai all invested in WeaveGrid last year because they're really excited looking ahead into what can we do as we build more and more vehicles of very different types, PHEVs through to BEVs, and we want them to be bi-directional capable, and we want them to be able to do a series of different grid services. And really working closely with them on that vehicle level design is something that we pride ourselves on, while at the same time, of course, trying to run all these large programs on behalf of utilities across the whole country. So that's a lot of where WeaveGrid's kind of value comes in.
Yeah, and I can't imagine that's easy, what you just described, right? Because on one level, yeah, you're working with the newer generation of software-defined vehicles that have fewer components, speaking maybe a more digital native language that you can talk to versus other people are going to suppliers and like Magna, whoever, great exactly. players in the industry, but connecting it all with CAN bus. And that's its own thing, right? So that's like a interesting yep. vehicle engineering thing where that's why part of what you guys bring to the table is a lot of that technological expertise. But the other component of this is just, I'm thinking like you said earlier, 80%, right, of charging for EV drivers currently, which is a small market share of the total car market, but most of it's at a home. And that's a huge, it's hugely important, obviously, for existing EV owners. But one of the things we've been noticing, like at the American EV Jobs Alliance and looking at like where EVs make sense for adoption, is that lots of people in suburban communities and cities are looking at like multi-unit dwellings, right, in different kinds yep. of living situations. And those require their own kinds of charging solutions. Ideally, it's not a DC fast charger. Could someone in an apartment go to a DC fast charger like they go to a gas station? Yeah. But ideally, they're not doing that. And optimally, if you have maybe 10 people in an apartment building who have EVs, and presumably in the coming years, that'll be a bigger number, you want some kind of scalable charging. So I know it's still early days, but to what extent are you guys looking at the multi-unit dwellings and more scalable charging options beyond the personal garage?
Yeah, look, I think our view is how do we make charging simpler, cleaner, cheaper everywhere as much as possible? And that's really the vision we think about when we think about it for all consumers and make all of that charging as grid friendly as possible. And I think the good thing about multifamily dwellings is that in some ways, the grid capacity is generally, there's enough grid capacity surrounding multifamily dwelling. Now, when you go beyond your first couple of chargers in a multifamily dwelling to actually adding, like we did in my apartment complex, for example, a theory is a whole bank, maybe of 10, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're really talking about needing to go upgrade your grid and so forth. So we partner with companies like Switch, really wonderful company that is actually designing and developing those solutions in the multifamily complexes themselves, or another partner of ours like ChargePoint, they've obviously had a solution out there for a while. Those partners, those CMSs in some sense, are taking care of the actual site design, the actual delivery, and the actual whatever setup that multifamily dwelling wants to be able to accommodate what I think is a pretty complex problem, because we might have 50 cars that are very quickly going from first EV to then suddenly 5 EVs, then 10 EVs, then 15 EVs, and suddenly the 5 chargers you put out there are not going to be enough, and now you got to figure out how to redesign it and do all that. But by working with partners like Switch and ChargePoint and others, I think one of the things we've been able to do is still take advantage of the flexibility that's inherent. Now, it might be a different kind of flexibility. It may not be 12 hours of sitting around. It might be only 2 hours or 3 hours of flexibility, because you're swapping more cars in and out of your parking lot. But by taking advantage of that flexibility, we can still deliver that value back to the grid. And it just enables even those consumers to still save money in the process of charging. Because to your point, single-family home chargers and single-family home charging, actually the cheapest charging, is still going to be a little more expensive because it's more complex site design, unless the multifamily real estate owner decides to give it at a more discounted rate. And then you go to DC fast charging, that's just extremely expensive. And so I actually think of it as deep inequity. And that's something that we really have to think about as we think about EV adoption, is like, how do we make these programs try and solve this inequitable issue that happens as you move from single family ownership to multifamily ownership of EVs? And so I think utility programs are another great way to continue driving more value for consumers and helping bring down the cost of that charging.
Yeah. If you look at like multifamily dwellings, there's a carrot and a stick here in the potential. Like the stick is the fact that, yeah, it's more complex for the site install, for charge point, for switch, whoever's doing that. They're going to charge an ample fee for both their software and the EVSEs and everything to enable 10 or 15 people to plug in at once. But like from a the carrot here, from a scale point of view, I can imagine that's advantageous, right? Because if you do have a much bigger community that has 20 or 30 people who will have some flexibility with how they charge their EVs and enough ports to support enough of them like at the same time.
Exactly.
That's where you guys can probably give a lot of value to the utility. And hey, totally. Here's this load we can shift around.
Yeah, it's several megawatts, right? So we've got multifamily projects that we're supporting across the country as well. We've got, I believe we're working with Switch in Chicago right now with ComEd. We're working in a multifamily pilot in Portland General. And by the way, if any of the listeners are interested, just go to weavegrid.com. You'll find tons of programs across the country for you to sign up as an EV driver. But yeah, in the multifamily pilots, we're talking about aggregations that are really large at each site versus individual homes, which are generally anywhere between 7 to 15 kW. But look, again, there's so many single family homes and there's still so much concentration of driving in those single family homes. You aggregate enough of those, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of megawatts is what we see across individual programs that we're running. And that's meaningful. Like in Colorado, where you live, like with Xcel, they've got power plants in the middle of the night, which is a ton of wind energy that they could otherwise be curtailing. And instead of that, they send us a signal and we turn on thousands of cars around the state and are able to suck up all that extra wind.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. We could do a whole separate podcast on grid design and the problems, but also the opportunities of the renewables and everything else.
Exactly.
And one of the benefits might just be that, AI and EVs, guess what? Both of those are going to use batteries. If you're going to have battery energy storage system backups and all this stuff, you can start to do a lot of exciting things. But before we go here, are there any last thoughts you have on trends you're seeing, maybe on this AI net with data centers or just EVs in general? Obviously, the EV market is tough in the US, right? It's difficult right now, not in the sense that it's shrinking, it's not, but the growth rate is obviously plateauing and might be doing so further because of just federal policy headwinds, changes in laws, incentive programs, and just consumer demand. So when you consider those things as difficulties, but at the same time, newer models coming online, EVs being great. I drive an EV. I love it. What are some of the trends you're thinking about for the next couple of years for the US, for people charging at home, and specifically, of course, for you guys at WeaveGrid?
Look, funnily enough, we feel incredibly bullish at WeaveGrid right now because of what we're seeing in terms of all the load growth from AI and the ability to use this massive resource space that I talked about, which are already the almost 7 million EVs on the roads today. So that's actually been a great opportunity to show the value of what EVs can do beyond being a great driving experience, but also being a great asset to an electric grid across up and down the whole electric grid. So there's actually like an incredible value story there. I think in terms of what's going to happen in the EV market, I guess like a privilege of having multiple OEM investors and utility investors and financial investors is like we get to see across the world and look at what's going on. And I think we'd all be kidding ourselves if we didn't look at China and look at the story coming out of China and say, look, still 1 in 4 new vehicle sales globally, it has only gone up to 1 in 4 new vehicle sales globally are now electric. With that in mind, it's so obvious that if the US continues to pull back or slow down, it's only going to be a temporary reprieve for anyone thinking that they can sell a few more ICE engines here and there. At the end of the day, like we operate in a global market and we're definitely seeing that pressure building. Now, when I talk to some OEM partners, they say, look, like maybe it just means I have to shift a few more vehicles in Europe first. Maybe I'm going to pull back here a little bit in the US. But then, and this is all public, but I talked to partners like Toyota, and they're saying, actually, this is the moment for us to also double down and continue showing that there is a choice, that people can buy PHEVs and they can buy BEVs. And we're seeing it in the fact that like the RAV4 starting next year is only going to now be a hybrid or a PHEV. And then Toyota is launching new BEVs, and Hyundai and Kia continue to have exceptional sales every month on month. So I feel like individual OEMs are going to have to make choices. And I think that's probably the biggest megatrend in this moment is like individual OEMs with tariffs and with shifting demands across the world have to make strategic choices on how they want to invest their resources. But that doesn't make me less bullish over the next 3 to 5 years on EVs in the US. It just makes me see that maybe we had some overhyping happening a few years back. But I think if you want to be globally competitive, you're going to have to invest. And you're going to have to invest here in the US too. So I remain very optimistic. And I think we'll continue to show how using EVs as a grid resource actually builds the business case for going more electric than less. And so I think that's it's exciting for that reason.
Absolutely. We'll put your guys' info in the description. People can check it out if you're a utility, if you work at an OEM, or if you're just a customer and you're interested if one of these programs is applicable to you in your area. Thanks so much, Apoor, for coming on.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you to Apoor for his time, and thank you for your listeners for tuning in. Remember, we're on YouTube, we're on your podcast app of choice, we're everywhere. Just search Directly Current. The link is in the show notes of wherever you're listening as well. Also, we will, of course, link WeaveGrid's site for drivers. If you're interested and want to see if you're in an area where you could potentially enroll in their program. Super excited about all of these startups and everyone working hard in the EV space, despite the challenging policy landscape and the passage of the big, beautiful bill that's not so beautiful for EVs. Nonetheless, we here at the American EV Jobs Alliance are very confident that electrification is the future and EVs are here to stay. We're seeing huge sale numbers from GM, just to put out some recent news. And of course, we're writing up more blog posts on the site as well, which we will also link in the description, evpolitics.org. Thanks so much for listening again, and I'll see you with another exciting guest in EV and battery world in 2 weeks.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.